in. And Big Ed is going to get her on the line, and then we'll see what's happening. And her name is Ann Garvin, and she writes books about women who do too much in a world that asks too much of them. That's her motto, or that's what she has on the front of her webpage, which is a very nice webpage. She looks like a nice, cheerful person, and the name of her book is There's No Coming Back From This, and it's by Ann Garvin. And so I'm just waiting to talk to her. And this new book is very interesting, and I think we're going to really have a lot of fun talking about it, because I love this. Both I love movies, I love costuming, and I love stories about Hollywood. So I'm really anxious to talk to Anne about this book, and she should be on in a few minutes, and that will be fun. Meanwhile, I want to remind you that our Legal Eagle is going to be coming on Joy and Paper next week, and that's Bill Larson. So I hope that I will have questions for him. Meanwhile, I'm going to talk to Ann Garvin. Hi, Ann, are you there?
Yes, I sure am. Hi, how are you?
Okay. I'm so happy to talk to you. I was just telling people that your website says, I write books about women who do too much in a world that asks too much from them.
Yes, that's exactly what I do. And I think I just displayed that, didn't I? Yeah.
Well, it's nice that I've got you on the line, because I really enjoyed the book. And I'm telling you this, so funny. You know, it is true. This, you know, life for women is so hectic nowadays, and yes. I think this book, There's No Coming Back From This, is an interesting concept. I like the sort of, having worked in Hollywood, I like the movie theme, the costuming theme, just being in Hollywood. So tell us about the book.
Well, it's a book about a woman that is pretty much pushed to the edge, which I like to write about women like, just like you and I, like not superstars in terms of like, we're not movie stars, maybe we're not, you know, like we don't have a lot of help, we're not super rich or something, but we get pushed to the edge and we're asked to, you know, pivot and keep life going, even though, you know, maybe things aren't working so well. So this woman gave her accountant access to her books, and she lost all her money because the accountant did not pay her taxes. She's desperate.
Yeah. So her name is Poppy Lively?
Yes, it's Poppy Lively. And she grew up with kind of a controlling father, and so she never lets anyone down, and she gets a job as a wardrobe person in Hollywood, and she is a very large fish out of water because she lives in Wisconsin and has to adapt to the kind of culture that Hollywood is, which is, you know, not the nicest always.
No, it's not. No, I don't know. You have personal experience working in Hollywood?
No, I don't, but no. I don't. I did a lot of research, and I spent a lot of time on the Universal set with a lot of costumers. But no, I don't. I'm just a lover of movies.
Well, you write it so well, because the thing is, I'm a girl from Michigan, and when you go to Hollywood, it is a different world.
Yes, and I mean, I spend a lot of time in LA. I have a lot of friends there, and I don't love the winters in Wisconsin anymore, so I know what it's like to go with Wisconsin eyes and live in LA for long periods of time, and I just thought it was such a funny sort of juxtaposition, because I'm actually from the East Coast originally, and so I spend a lot of time sort of as a fish out of water. So I just thought it was going to be like the perfect fish out of water situation by putting this woman from Wisconsin into Hollywood. And it was the humor sort of writes itself. It's so funny.
Yeah, that's exactly it. When you look at it, this fish out of water. When you get into Hollywood, it's almost, you're like, you do feel like, what is going on? Where,
yes.
How did I not know about so many things?
Yes, exactly. Like when I was there, just when I was there vacationing, or not vacationing, but writing and living there during, it was 2 winters ago, and then last winter, I spent so much time there, and I was just like I think I put it in the book. When I walked, you know, like I remember walking past someone who was in the middle of the road, and they were homeless, and everybody else was kind of walking around them, and I went over to them, and I, like, called the police and called an ambulance, and everybody else was like, what are you doing? And I said, well, this is what we do in Wisconsin. Like, this is it. So, it was obvious things like that, and then less obvious things like that I was so enamored with taking a look at.
Well, luckily, when I was there, that was quite a few years ago, there were no homeless. There were no homeless.
Right.
I hate to tell people this, and they don't quite grasp it, that in those days, I mean, if you were walking down the street, and they would stop you and say, why are you walking down the street? Because it was so unusual for ordinary people to be walking down the street. You're supposed to have a car. I mean, you couldn't walk into Beverly Hills on the street. They wouldn't let you. They'd stop you so fast, you didn't know what was happening to you. Yeah, I mean, it was a different world, and it was a much, much safer world, I will tell you that. But what happens in the Hollywood environment, in the filming business, that hasn't changed so much.
No, I'm sure. I think it was also very cutthroat, and the more I read about, you know, what they went through, what some of those, especially the female actresses went through, you know, in terms of sexism and all the rest of it, it's a little overwhelming.
It is. And I mean, you manage to, how can I say, you play it right. It doesn't get too deep into the negative,
right?
Because that
right.
would not make for a fun book, to tell you the truth. I've read some of the books about really horrific things, but this is more, I mean, it's a nice read. It's fascinating. Tell me your interest in costumes, because I love costumes. I love the whole, I mean, one of my prized possessions, I have this hat box from Coco Chanel. I mean, I have a few things. I have paper dolls from the 1940s. Fashion.
Really?
You know, I just love that.
Yeah.
So what's your fascination with costumes?
Well, you know, I was in theater just briefly. Of course, I did it before I had children, because otherwise, like, I don't know how anybody could do theater with children, because, well, it's, unless you're, you know, wealthy. Because I love theater. I love going to theater, and so I love doing it. And so I got really interested in how the seamstresses would create those costumes, so much so that when I got married, I had the costumer make my wedding dress. I know, and I mean, it wasn't, you know, wildly flashy or anything, but it was made for me, and she did it with the muslin, and she, you know, made the dupe first, or the shell of it, and then built this gorgeous dress around it. And I've always been admiring of people who can sew and create things like that. I just don't even know how they do it. But when I was at the costume shop in both on Universal Set and then the really big one that's in downtown, it's sort of uptown, actually, in L.A. I can't think of the name of it. Just blanking on it. So I couldn't believe how many costumes were there, and I couldn't believe that they didn't have a spot for the iconic ones. Like, I wrote that in the book as if they did. It's the only liberty I took about costuming. There's no vault. So that sometimes if you are walking through the costume, you know, rental area, you can pull one out and Mickey Rooney's name is on the inside of it. Or, you know, like, Katharine Hepburn's name will be sewed in it. Like, it's not in a special spot. And I couldn't believe that. Like, I just couldn't believe it. But, you know, it's a business, and they use those costumes over and over, and I think it's expensive, and so they just recycle them. I couldn't imagine. But it was fascinating.
It is.
Yeah.
Wow.
I loved it.
Well, I know I've been on. I had at one time I had a VIP pass to Universal, and so I went into a lot of the nooks and crannies of the place. And it does, it gives you a thrill when you see and you can touch. For film lovers, and you recognize sometimes, you recognize it and you say, oh my gosh, for me, of course, I wrote a film for Debbie Reynolds, which never got made. So I had a lot of time. It went into turnaround because of the 2008 financial collapse of Wall Street, which dried up all our funding. But I used to have so much fun talking to her about costumes.
Oh,
and
what a dream.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that's what, you know, I sort of like, I like the start about the IRS. I know people who have trusted. I would never have done that. I would never, ever trust a business manager and give them rights. I've known a few people who've done it, and I don't know, you know, how they can do it. I wouldn't be comfortable doing that.
Okay, me either. I know, and I because I'm so I don't know, careful, and I know where the money is. But I think that, you know, for her, I had to really think about how I was going to write that so that it was believable for those of us that would never do that.
People
she has
do.
Really pushed to do it.
Yeah, I know people who have lived to rue the day.
Yes. And you would, wouldn't you? And, you know, there are a lot of famous people that have hired their brothers or sisters or somebody to do it, and they've lost their family members.
Well, Debbie lost a fortune. I mean, millions.
Oh, did she?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I could go on for hours about how much she lost because of doing that. So, yes, I know people.
Oh, my God, really? Because of a business manager?
Business manager.
Wow.
Oh, you have to look into that one. That's a horrific story.
That's fascinating and awful.
But, I met others. Sometimes it's just they meet somebody, and it's like any con game where the person looks so nice. I mean, I have met people, business managers. I've been in the same, you know, like luncheon where their business manager is there, and the business manager is always the nicest, you know, kindest, most thoughtful person there. So we feel very badly for Poppy.
But she took it on the chin, that's for sure.
But then she gets in there and tries, and then she gets into some interesting things that happen in this book, which I thought, that's a nice twist.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to, I didn't, it's as you say, I did not want to get into, say, the Me Too movement or anything like that. I didn't want to have a commentary on that. I wanted to figure out something that would be really interesting, but also related to the costume. And then I don't know actually how I came on that idea. Thankfully, my creativity, which isn't always available to me, was available to me at that moment. So it was fun to write that.
Well, it did. It worked, and it worked out well. And you know, you mentioned that you did a little bit of theater. And I did a lot of theater with my children. That was the most fun.
While
they were
really
on stage,
fun.
I was doing all the backstage stuff. I actually built a 30-foot dragon out of paper mache.
Oh, my gosh.
That
is amazing.
I had so much fun backstage. It was wonderful. I loved having the kids out there, you know, singing, dancing, whatever. But I enjoyed the backstage. I think that's so much fun. So you can still do it when you have children and have lots of fun at it.
Yeah.
And children theater is great because I think it's a great discipline for children to learn lines, to learn music, and just to get out there. You know, it changes their personality too, their ability to later on in life face people My kids had no problem talking to adults. I mean, they could talk to anybody because they learned to be out there and sort of entertain people.
Yeah, it's so important. I do think it is a really great space for that kind of thing. And you know, the other thing is, and what I like is the idea of writing about a closed space like that, you know, when you're in theater, everybody is your best friend that's in that moment, in that play, and that you're so tight and close because you spend so much time together, and I kind of like looking at that, how those communities get built and how close you can be in those situations. And so I would imagine for children, that's the same kind of thing they build as they get the idea of what real teamwork is.
Exactly. They really do. And you do have that excitement, that just focusing yourself on a project. Mm-hmm. And that's so important. It really served my children very well all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, I landed up homeschooling them because they were so, actually, part of the reason I homeschooled them, they were so verbal at such a young age that they didn't fit into regular school. And
yeah, that makes sense to me.
So
yeah,
it was wonderful, and I had a ton of fun. I just love it. That whole design process. Well, as you saw, the costumes. I never designed costumes for any of the shows they were in, and they were in a lot of shows from Pippin to, Dickens things. They were in everything. And I never did the costumes, but I loved watching the costume designers, how clever they are.
Oh, I would love to just sit and watch the designers work. I was able to, when the costumers that I met were people that were on big productions, and one of them won the Academy Award for Dune when I was at a luncheon with them. So it was like this really amazing time to talk to these people about, you know, where their vision was, who did what. And the thing I think that I found the most interesting was that it's very granular. You know, it's not like the gowns are gorgeous. It's amazing that there are those gowns. But, like, on a day-to-day basis, they're like, where are the buttons? Like, that hem isn't right. And they're just so detail-oriented. And it was kind of amazing to see that. Plus, they're also very undersung. You know, nobody talks about it.
Exactly.
In my opinion, you know, they make the characters. They create them with their clothing. The actors do it, but it puts them all together in one space, and it's something that isn't talked about, and I think that's a great shame because it's so amazing.
Well, I love looking at it through Poppy's eyes and the whole excitement of being back, you know, the backside of a film. When you're in the background, you learn so much and you enjoy so much. So it's a great story. It's fun. You're witty, and you know it all comes. You're a PhD, right? You have a PhD.
Yeah.
But not in writing.
Thank
goodness. I think people who get PhDs in writing tend to lose their humor, and you certainly have not lost your humor.
No, thank you. I think that I have a way of looking at the world. I think that I can't look at anything too dramatically and without a joke. I think everything's funny. Not everything, but a lot of things.
No, I know. There is some, you know, heartbreaking things in this book, and I mean, you, of course, right away, anybody who has to deal with the IRS, you already feel sorry for them. You know.
Oh my God! I know. I had a few people saying, oh my gosh, I was reading that and I got so anxious when she started talking about the taxes. And I was like, oh, I know.
Too. So that I thought that made it fun too. Well, I think, I think it's a nice change of pace. I get so many, thrillers and international stuff, and that just is sort of down home Hollywood in Hollywood look. I think it's lots of fun, and it's just wonderful that you've written this book. It's called "There's No Coming Back from This." But there is a lot of coming back to this book because it's really good. So I think it's fantastic. And you're going to, do very well with this book. Are you going to, you have a website, I know. And
I do,
it's just your name. Anne?
Mm-hmm. Anne Garvin, yep.
And Anne Garvin. And I write books about women who do too much.
Yes, I do.
But we love it, don't we?
Oh, we love it. We do love it. Honestly, I am so lucky to have found this to be as my what I consider my last career, and I just love it so much.
And I just want to mention Tall Poppy Writers. Explain that. Obviously, you like the name Poppy.
So, I do, and I think that was in a breathtaking moment of lack of creativity that I chose Poppy for the name, but. The Tall Poppy Writers really bond together to help women authors find readers. And we just believe that writing and publishing is not a competitive sport, and we want people who want to have this career, we want to help them have the career. And so I put together this marketing group when I was having trouble finding readers myself, and I just thought, everybody's having this problem, why don't we just bond together? And you have to find the right kind of people to form a group like this, because it requires a generosity. And the nice thing about this is that by doing this, I have met so many lovely, generous authors. And so what we try to do is just share the wealth as much as we can to help people find books that they like and enjoy.
Well, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful idea, a great, it is so important today in this publishing world that writers help writers, and most importantly, writers help writers find readers, because we need readers. So that's a whole big job. But you've done a wonderful job putting this together. I like the idea. It's on your website. It's Anne Garvin. People go there and have a look at this Tall Poppy Writers group, and really get involved, because it's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. And if people are interested, they can sign up for my newsletter. And in the newsletter, we only send out one newsletter a month. It has one piece of original art writing from me that nobody else sees or has seen before. And then we talk about whatever books are being launched that month within the Tall Poppy group. And then if there are, and we are opening up reader, writer, author salons, we're going to start doing retreats. And so if people are interested in, mixing it up with writers and authors, sometimes for some different kinds of retreats, both here and in Europe, that newsletter is the place that they would get that information.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. USA Today bestselling author Anne Garvin. And I think your book is fun, and it's original. I think it's very, what I like is that it's original. Nobody else has written a book as close to this. So I just think it's fun, and it's called "There's No Coming Back from This." And get this book, and it'll put a smile on your face. Thank you, Anne.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much. Yes, you are saying all the loveliest things. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, and maybe we could have you back one day just to talk about Tall Poppy Writers. Okay,
anytime. I would love that.
Let's put together a program, half an hour, and you can talk more about that and some of your success stories and some other ideas for getting readers. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye. Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Okay. We'll play Book Buzz, and then I'll be back with my next guest.
everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Last month, Hurricane Ian made landfall in the Sunshine State of Florida, which meant that so many theme parks containing roller coasters were shut down. Now that Ian is gone, theme parks featuring roller coasters are back open to the public. And now that they're open, I know the Pigeon is certainly going to ride on them. Yes, the Pigeon, one of the characters created by children's author and illustrator Mo Willems. The Pigeon makes a return in the book, The Pigeon Will Ride the Roller Coaster, written and illustrated by Mo Willems. Mo Willems isn't a big fan of roller coasters, but the last couple of years for him learning to adapt was a real roller coaster for him. It eventually turned into the idea of The Pigeon Will Ride the Roller Coaster. Fasten your seatbelts for an emotional story full of twists, turns, and loop-de-loops as the Pigeon will be ready to ride the roller coaster. The question is, will you be ready? I think after reading this book, you'll certainly find me ready to ride along with the Pigeon. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Lynn Hightower, and the name of her book is The Beautiful Risk. Hi, Lynn.
Hello, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, I am so happy to talk to you. You know, I recently really discovered how much I love psychological thrillers because they capture your mind so well, if they're done right, and you have done it right, that you forget about what's going on in the world. And I can't think of any time that I don't want to know what's going on in the world more than right now. I thought the pandemic was bad, but everything else, I mean, with the war and inflation and this one and that one, oh, boy, to have a book like this that you get into and you don't care about anything.
I am so thrilled to hear you say that, because what I wanted to do was create a sexy, adrenaline-fueled, firing all cylinders heroine who is back to the wall, and she's an everyday person, and the things she has to do are jaw-dropping. I like to think of this novel as like the first John Wick movie where the dog wins.
That's a good description, because what is so nice about it, as I said, It's immersive. You really take us there. We'll talk about France, about Mont Blanc. You take us to a location. And now, of course, I've been there. I know this area very well. For me, it was like a trip back in time. But I also know that new readers coming to it who haven't been there, they're going to say, wow, I want to go, you know, because you write so well. It's exciting. And the story is, well, I'll let you explain the story because it is a shocker. And all the way through, there's a lot of things happening, many, many things happening in this book.
I tend to take the kitchen sink approach to my writing.
You did.
And any cool thing I can think of goes straight in the book, and hopefully it's woven into the tapestry. But this book begins when Jenny Lagarde gets a phone call with that 33 area code from France. She's newly widowed. Her husband died in a plane crash on Mount Blanc, and her beloved service dog, German Shepherd Leo, dragged him out of the plane and then disappeared into the terrain of Mount Blanc when he was spooked by the rescue people. And she's called by a police captain named Philippe Brevard, and he tells her that they have drone footage of a man who is dressed in her husband's coat. His hair is cut like her husband, but he cannot be her husband, and she knows he's not, and Brevard knows he's not. But they find it very sinister and mysterious because he has got Leo on a leash. He's got her dog. And the first thing she does is get on a plane to France to go and get her dog.
Wow. Wow. And, of course, we'll talk about Leo because he is so much a part of this whole book. And
the story.
Exactly. Animals tend to do that. And the importance of Leo to Janie Lagarde, Junie Lagarde. Junie, actually, it's so funny. My first cousin was called Junie. And
really?
You don't hear, you know, lots of people, well, nobody uses the name June anymore at all.
No.
I haven't heard of a child named June for years and years, but my first cousin, her name was June, but we called her Junie. And I was Patsy, and she was Junie. So I like that name. And one of the things is she needs Leo.
She does. She has a cookie bite hearing loss, as do I. And I usually kept that top secret, but I decided I wanted to write about it, come out of the closet, and let the world know what this is like. All right? And she can hear brilliantly at the top of the range and the bottom of the range. But in the middle, where there's conversation, she really can't hear a lot. So Leo is her hearing service dog. And I have a hearing service dog named Leah, another German Shepherd, just like Leo. And you just don't know how important it is, because until I had Leah, I was not aware of a lot of things that are going on around me or directly behind me. And she's there to nudge my leg to alert me, or to give a sharp bark if she thinks there's something going on she doesn't like, because she's a really good service dog. She has a very gentle heart, but she's a German Shepherd, and she will protect me no matter what.
So there you can see right away why she would jump on a plane to find out what is happening. And then when she gets there, well, let's just for a moment sort of set the scene. Mont Blanc is it's a really strange mountain. It's not the highest in the world, but it's a dangerous mountain.
It's the most dangerous. Yes, it is.
It's hard to believe.
It's terrifying. It's hard to believe. I find it terrifying, but most people love Mount Blanc in a way because it's somewhat accessible. And so a lot of people go up when they're really not prepared and they are not careful enough. And I also think with climate change and the glaciers melting, that shifts the terrain and also makes it more dangerous. I know that when I went, that little red train you take in Chamonix to go to the glacier, people still take the little red train and they go to see where the glacier used to be because it's melting.
Yeah, I know. I've recently I had a friend who was right there and called and said, "Well, I'm here. This is where you've talked about being." So you set the scene nicely. And then, of course, we're on an adventure because a lot of things happen in this book.
Yes, they happen fast, too. Ginny is stalked by this man, and she doesn't know what he wants, but he's terrifying, and he is utterly, utterly sinister.
Well, we don't want to give too much away, because that's part of the fun of this book. I love the reveal. I love when I get into a book, I don't know what's going to happen, and I get this, really, when you build up this psychological suspense, and you get so excited about it, I think that's terrific writing.
Thank you. I have zero patience. I don't like slow books. I don't just build for 100 pages. I'm going to build, but reveal. I build through reveals because I have no patience. So I write the book I wish somebody would write for me. And it's got to go boom, 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 boom for me.
And this book certainly does go boom, boom, boom. I can tell you, people will love it. And, of course, they'll love Leo, too, because...
Leo's awesome, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So tell me, where are we talking to you? Where are you right now? In your parlor?
I'm in Lexington. Yes, I am. I'm in the writing parlor. And Leah, because she is in what we like to call... preschool, which is really publicity protocol, because otherwise she would be chiming in, alerting me to things. And if I had a show where there were men walking up and down my driveway and she would not stop barking, and she was right, I needed to know that. So now she's in a back room full of sunshine with treats and toys, and we're going to play ball after you and I talk, and this is what I call preschool. And she knows that when you're in preschool, have to be very quiet.
So. I love when I read about it that you have a writing parlor. I hadn't heard the word parlor for years, and I thought...
this is a little Victorian cottage, and it's downtown in Lexington, Kentucky, in the Distiller District. And it's very small, it's very sweet, it's very charming, and, it's just the kind of place I like, and because, if it's not really, really old, I'm not interested. For me, it's just has a very good writing energy. When I buy a place or move into a place, I have to go and sit and say, can I write here? And this is probably the best place I've ever had for writing in my life.
Well, I think it's a lovely idea, and because I do love the word. I realized when I read it, I said, I like that word. It just, parlor, it just, it brings back memories of my grandmother. And well, actually, the best parlor I ever went to, my girlfriend had a great aunt who had one of these old Victorian houses, a big, gigantic Victorian house, but she had a parlor, and I remember how we had to act. I mean, she was really old at the time, so she was like from the Victorian era, I think, and it was so wonderful, and I still remember the excitement of sitting in that parlor, and it was the kind that had sliding doors between the dining room and the, and it was so thrilling. It was like, oh, I love that. We don't have parlors now. We have these family rooms, and it's not the same thing.
It's not, and this space is very small, and it's very cozy, and it's just the kind of place you want to curl up. And it had an old coal-burning fireplace, which, of course, you can't use anymore, so I had it replaced with a, it looks like a coal-burning fireplace, but it's a gas insert. and it, and you know, Puppy and I curl up in there on the couch, and I write. And it's just, to me, parlor means cozy place with a fireplace for Lynn to write. That is how we define it in the Hightower Dictionary.
I think it's delightful. Well, of course, you know, you write so well. You won the Seamus Award for Best First Private Eye Novel, which I think is fantastic. That must have been a thrill.
It was a shock and a thrill, and I was absolutely delighted. And that book, you know, was near and dear to my heart because it's a private detective, and she takes care of women who fall between the cracks of the legal system. And they don't have money for a private eye, and there's a lot of, you know, but they're back to the wall, and so she basically lives by barter, where, you know, so she'll work for somebody, and they'll clean her house for 2 months, and or their brother will fix her car, they'll bring her chili every Friday for 8 weeks, you know, and there's not a lot of money involved.
Well, one of the wonderful things, too, is that you got a heck of a blurb.
I did. You know, I was new enough at writing back then that I just wrote to every mystery writer that I loved. And when I wrote them my letter, it was so clear that I had read every single one of their books. And mainly I was saying, listen, I have a book and I'd love for you to give me a blurb, but I know you're incredibly busy. And then I would talk to them about their novel. And, you know, because I'm Southern, I made it very easy to say no. I said, listen, I know you're writing. I know you're busy. I you know, I'm just a very new writer. I live in Kentucky, and I don't want to disturb your work. And it will not hurt my feelings one little bit if you say no. And for some reason, you know, I mean, that they couldn't resist. And they were just so terribly kind.
Well, I think it is that Southern gentleness. One a gentlewoman, we have to, you know, you can't, one can't ignore you.
I don't know. It could be. And that's actually how I sold the book. I was at a writer's conference, and an editor came up to talk to me, and he said, well, what have you got? And it had been turned down a couple of times, and I said, oh, you wouldn't like it. Nobody likes it. It's not a book. It's never going to go. And he said, well, he was British. He said, well, just tell me what it's about. You know, I tell him, you're not going to like it because of this. And he'd say, oh, I like that. And so I had like three more. And then he looked at me and he said, let me tell you. You have your agent messenger that novel to my office Monday morning, and he bought it that week.
Oh, it's wonderful. That's great. I think
I know. I was just so depressed about it. I was like, no, you don't like it. Nobody wants this novel.
Oh, I think that's so delightful. I mean, that is absolutely delightful. I think it's wonderful. And now for the new book, The Beautiful Risk, you have Lee Child on your cover. My goodness.
Yes, he gave me a quote before, and you know, the funny thing about Lee Child is I actually gave him a quote for his first novel. David Heifel was his editor, I think, and I had met David at one of the conventions, and he said, you know, this is such a great book, would you get a bit of quote? And I read it, and I'm like, oh, this is super awesome, yes, I would be glad to, please, you know, put my name all over the back of this book, it's going to sell everywhere, and let me tell him how great it is. So finally said,
yeah, and so he's continued it by returning the favor.
He's done very well. I just have to tell you that if you get a Hightower quote for your first novel, it's going to launch your career.
Yeah, exactly. And he called you brave. Bold. Mm-hmm. Ah, so mm-hmm. That's it.
That's well,
in that nice Southern gentle way from your parlor, you are brave and bold.
In my parlor, in my Southern gentle way, I am a pull out the stops, full steam ahead, all or nothing kind of person.
Exactly. And people will love this book, one, because it is a thriller, it is suspenseful, but also we'll get back to Leo a little bit, because everybody who loves dogs, you know, dogs are often featured in, you know, books, but in this mm-hmm. case, Leo really... He's like the star here.
He is the star, and he was my first shepherd, and he was exactly as he is written in that book. And he was fierce and protective And, you know, my husband and I rescued him from a pretty terrible situation. And the second week that I had him, my husband was out of town, and I had, at midnight, two men under my bedroom window coming through.
Oh.
And Leo was laying on his new little bed with his new little teddy bear before I even registered that they were there. He was up on his feet, and I thought he was going through the glass to get them. And they took off, and I, he was just like, open the door, I'm going to bring them down. And I'm like, no, they might hurt you. And he's like, just kidding. And they had broken into quite a few homes in the area before the police tracked them down. The police were pretty quick about getting them, but I didn't even call the police that night because Leo was just like, I'll take him. I'm going to get him down. He was so fierce, and he was so, I had never seen anything like it in my life. And then afterward, he just laid back on his bed and started playing with his teddy bear. Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah, this is just, this is German Shepherd business, and I will do what I need to do. I was pretty thrilled.
Oh, it's a wonderful story. I love it. And the book is called The Beautiful Risk. It's a great book, lots of excitement in this book, and you won't, I guarantee you, when you're reading this book, you will not worry about what's happening in the rest of the world. You will not worry about the cost of a jar of mayonnaise. I went, and it was $9. I thought, what are you crazy? $9?
You're kidding. That's terrible.
I'm giving up mayonnaise, that's for sure. So I'm saying, okay, just read Lynn Hightower. Read The Beautiful Risk. You'll forget about things at least for a little while. So, Lynn, I think it's a great book. And I want to mention also you have a nice website. It's a very nice one. It's done very well. And it's lynnhightower.com. And you're also a writing coach and consultant, right?
I am. I work novelist to novelist. I love working with writers and watching their novels grow up, watching them learn, scene structure. Oh, you mean I really can tell the plot? Because you can't show a plot. You got to say what's going on. And they say it can't be that easy. And I'm like, just give it a shot. So it's good to watch a novel grow up.
Exactly. And I think that your website has this explanation, novelist to novelist, and
yes.
People, if you're writing, if you've been writing, and I have quite a few of my listeners who did NaNoWriMo. They finished their book, you know, in November. They did 50,000 words, and now they're struggling for the past 6 or 7 months how to put it into shape. They know what they want.
Yes.
But they don't always know how to do it. And
I get a lot of nano writers who are like, now what do I do? It's not ready.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they found the discipline to actually sit and write, which is a wonderful thing to discover in yourself. If you're not sure, if you have it within you to do it, to do NaNoWriMo teaches you, my gosh, I can actually do it. I can write 1,000 words a day. I can really make it happen. But then you need that other discipline to really shape your craft. And that's what somebody like you does.
That's right. And also, make sure your story delivers, that it's nicely paced, and clarity. You know, people really do need to know what's going on. I so rarely see anybody else talk about that, but clarity is essential, because if a reader doesn't know what's going on, they're out of the story, and you're going to lose them.
Yeah. Well, I think your approach is the right way for people who need to consult with another writer about how to improve their writing. Everybody go to Lynn Hightower's website. It's very good. It's a very excellent web page in general. I love the layout of it. But go to that the part where you can learn about Lynn and how she will work with a manuscript and help you get published, maybe. So that's important, right?
A lot of my writers do get published. I'm very proud.
Okay. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It was absolute joy to talk to you. I think you're delightful. Your book is great. And uh, I th- anybody who works with you, I'm sure, will have lots of fun.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, you enjoy your parlor today. Have a nice cup of tea. Well, maybe iced tea today. And maybe with a touch of bourbon. You know, maybe the reason people like you in Kentucky, the land of bourbon.
Well, that's true, you know. I am just right around the corner from a bourbon distillery,
I know.
They're all around me. If I wanted wonderful bourbon, I could go half a block and get some.
Oh,
it's fabulous.
Well, maybe I'm going to come and visit you, because I know it's not considered proper. I think it's not considered proper to like bourbon on ice. But
oh, no, it is.
I love bourbon on ice.
Bourbon on ice is wonderful, and then as the ice just slowly melts a little bit, it mellows out the bourbon. So, bourbon on ice is absolutely a tradition here. You are a very proper bourbon drinker.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to come and visit you. How about that? Sit in your parlor.
We'll have bourbon and barbecue. That's what we do around here.
Okay. Lynn, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Lynn Hightower. And go to her website. Her book is available online, and it's called The Beautiful Risk, and it's a beautiful book. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. That's nice. Oh, I like it. I have been to all the places she writes about in this book. I've been to the exact spots that she writes about. It's like going back. We used to travel all that area in, it's just a wonderful part of France. So I just enjoyed this book very, very much. Anyway, people, I just remember sending your questions for Bill Larson. Any intellectual property questions? And I hope they're not all about AI, because what are we going to do about AI? We're all going to have to turn into AIs or something. Anyway, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like we are hoping for Carol J. Perry, who has now written 13 Witch City Mysteries, and she's working on the 14th, because she never stops, and she is somebody who knows how to write 1,000 words a day. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Stay cool. And maybe if you haven't had bourbon on ice, try it. It'll really relax you while you're reading a good book. Okay, everybody, bye-bye now.